They say that there's a high likelihood that there will be disinformation campaigns, influence operations by U.S. adversaries that will get Americans to start doubting the process.
There are U.S. concerns about hacking the election. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, should Americans trust polling data? We explore a tweeted plan to pull all U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. Google is the target of a massive government lawsuit, and NASA flies to an asteroid for a pickup and return trip to Earth. It is all on today's VOA Asia. With just under 2 weeks to go until the U.S. presidential election, government officials are again expressing concern and vigilance over foreign interference. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden provided details to VOA's Lori London on the latest warning to come out on Tuesday.
Officials in the U.S. are sounding the alarm about not so much what they think is going to happen in terms of any cyber attacks or anything that physically could impact the election and the election process in the U.S., but more disinformation and the idea that foreign adversaries could start to sow some distrust in the process. Specifically, the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, which has really spearheaded the U.S. efforts on election security, put out a statement saying that now is, quote, the perfect time for our adversaries to launch efforts intended to undermine your confidence. And he was really speaking to American voters saying, look, the U.S. does not see any indications that foreign adversaries have been able to infiltrate critical systems. The U.S. has not seen any indications that adversaries can do anything that would actually change votes once they are cast. But given the timing and given how different this election is from all others, they say that there's a high likelihood that there will be disinformation campaigns, influence operations by U.S. adversaries that will get Americans to start doubting the process. And that's what they're trying to guard against.
Are they giving any specifics on what they're seeing or hearing?
They haven't given any specifics about any disinformation operations or influence operations from countries like China, Russia, or Iran, although there have been warnings out there that the Chinese are doing things trying to help Biden's campaign and hurt Trump's campaign. The Russians have been trying to, in the words of U.S. counterintelligence officials, trying to denigrate the Biden campaign, and some Kremlin-linked entities have been trying to boost the campaign of President Trump. But for the most part, what they're saying here is that be prepared for the unknown. And what the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency has said, what other U.S. counterintelligence officials have said, is that really voters, American voters, are the last line of defense. And so that they want voters to be prepared. Understand, first of all, that given the vast amount, the record number of mail-in ballots, there's a good chance that the U.S. will not be able to call a winner in the presidential election on election night. Be prepared for that. That should not be something that's unusual or give you cause for alarm, they're telling voters. They're also telling voters to look for trusted sources of information. They're telling voters, don't believe anything that you see randomly on social media, but look to verified accounts from election officials or the websites of election officials. And then they say also voters should be responsible. Only share information from trusted sources, from actual election officials, verified accounts from state or local or even federal officials. And also they're asking voters, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your neighbors not to share sensational but unverified information about the election. They're trying to get Americans to make sure if there's any influence operation out there that's trying to sow chaos, to sow panic, that Americans don't help it out by repeating it and that they only trust officials when they say this is what's actually going on.
Okay. So basically what I'm hearing is that they're warning of foreign entities potentially looking to sow chaos and sort of uncertainty about the legitimacy of the votes rather than actually trying to change votes.
Right. So there are a couple of things that people tend to worry about. The first thing is, can somebody come in, a foreign adversary, a country like Russia or China, go in, do something to the election system, the computer systems, and change the way that they voted? U.S. officials say that is almost impossible, highly unlikely, and that they haven't seen any indications that Russia, China, or anybody else is trying to do that. they are worried about, though, is something that's a little bit easier for a country like Russia or China or another cyber actor to carry off. That's a disinformation campaign to get U.S. voters to change how they're going to vote or to change how they perceive the election. That is, change their view of the election from something that's legitimate to something where they're trying to convince American voters that things went wrong. This isn't a legitimate election, and therefore to doubt the process, to doubt democracy. That's something that counterintelligence officials have been warning Russia's been trying to do going all the way back to 2016 and that election.
VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Seldon talking with VOA's Lori London. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Chinese activists are detained for backing a former university professor. The U.S. reportedly lost $19 billion to fraud and abuse in Afghanistan. The International Monetary Fund slashes this year's economic forecast for Asia. The Vatican Secretary of State says a controversial deal with Beijing on the appointment of Roman Catholic bishops in China will be renewed. Japan's prime minister opposes any actions that escalate tensions in the East and South China Seas. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Should Americans trust polling data showing Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden leading President Donald Trump ahead of the November 3rd election? VOA's Elizabeth Lee takes a look.
While Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden is off the campaign trail this week to prepare for the final presidential debate, President Donald Trump continues to rally supporters in battleground states like Arizona and Pennsylvania.
We have to show them, the Democrats, a thundering defeat on November 3rd. And if I don't sound like a typical Washington politician, it's because I'm not a politician, that's for sure.
The Biden campaign is far from silent, dispatching Democratic vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris to the critical swing state of Florida, where she said much is at stake in the November 3rd election.
Criminal justice reform is on the ballot in 2020. Climate reform is on the ballot in 2020. Everything is on the ballot in 2020. Joe Biden is on the ballot in 2020.
National polls show Biden leading Trump, some by double digits, but polls are tighter in battleground states like Florida and Pennsylvania. What happens in those states will be critical, says political scientist David Damore.
But at the end of the day, you know, it's going to be, those states are going to be very, very close. And that's why I think you have this potential for a Biden blowout, but also a very, very Trump, narrow Trump victory.
Many polling firms are approaching this presidential election differently than in 2016, when relatively few predicted the Trump victory that was propelled in part by whites without a college degree.
The biggest error in the polling in 2016 was that the white electorate wasn't being segregated or being weighted, based upon education levels. And that turned out to be a really sharp difference between college and non-college. So you're not seeing that mistake being made this time. You also see in a lot of these states that Biden's hovering above or around 50%. Clinton never hit those 50% marks.
There are also fewer undecided voters this time around, giving pollsters more confidence in their data.
Under my leadership, prosperity will surge.
The economy is probably his strongest substantive issue, in the sense as he can make that argument.
There is so much on the ballot in 2020.
While Trump touts America's pre-pandemic economy and promises a swift rebound, Democrats continue to hammer Trump's job performance overall, as both campaigns urge supporters to vote. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand Wednesday further eased coronavirus restrictions and plans to shorten a quarantine period to encourage foreign visitors, an official said, after the country welcomed its first vacationers since a ban in April aimed at halting the spread. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. At least 15 people were killed in a stampede among thousands of Afghans gathered near Pakistan's consulate on Wednesday as jostling broke out between people applying for visas. Emma McCarthy reports.
At least 15 people have been killed in a human stampede in the Afghan city of Jalalabad. Thousands gathered near Pakistan's consulate there, and officials say jostling broke out between people applying for visas. An estimated 3,000 Afghans had congregated on the open ground, which is usually used for sports and public gatherings. Officials told Reuters that they were waiting to collect tokens needed to apply for a visa. 11 of the 15 victims were women, and several senior citizens were among more than a dozen injured, including Aladdin Khan.
When the jostling broke out, weaker people fell to the ground and stronger people dragged themselves out of the crowd. The women were also there and were being stamped during the crowd. Some people criticize us for getting the visa, but I want to go to Pakistan because of my illness.
Tens of thousands of Afghans travel every year to neighboring Pakistan to ensure medical treatment, education, and jobs. Pakistan also hosts about 3 million Afghan refugees and economic migrants. The Pakistan embassy in Kabul issued a statement expressing deep grief and sadness.
Reuters' Emma McCarthy reporting. President Trump has said U.S. troops will be out of Afghanistan by the end of this year. We explore that coming up on VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. China's environmental conditions are grim, falling short of public expectations even after 5 years of efforts to improve air quality, boost clean energy, and curb greenhouse gas emissions, according to a senior official. All of the big stories come your way throughout the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. President Donald Trump has made it known that he wants U.S. troops out of Afghanistan by this coming Christmas. VOA Afghan Service reporter Breshna Omerkale spoke with retired Brigadier General Mark Kimmett and asked him if that statement meant that would make U.S. involvement in Afghanistan mission accomplished.
Well, first of all, I think that there have been a number of different voices on the issue of withdrawal. Most recently, his National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien, seemed to indicate that this was going to be more conditions-based than time-based. So I would be surprised if the troops would be completely gone by Christmas. As to your question about mission accomplished, that has a number of meanings, but I think that we will continue to have a relationship both diplomatically with the government of Afghanistan and militarily with the Afghan National Security Forces for years to come. There will be a reason to train, provide logistics, provide air support, provide intelligence if requested by the government of Afghanistan, and we're certainly prepared to do that.
In response to President Trump's tweet on the Christmas date for troops withdrawal, General Miller said these are political decisions. What should we get from these statements?
Well, they're certainly coming from the president, so they have authority behind them. As you remember, when he said we are pulling our troops out of Syria, that's exactly what happened in a very short period of time. Afghanistan is different, though. I think that the president may have been persuaded by his advisors that it is possible to reduce the number of troops in Afghanistan, but not completely eliminate them at this point.
If the U.S. troops withdraw before any agreement is reached between the Taliban and the Afghan government, do you see any risks of Afghanistan descending into chaos?
Well, I think that certainly is a concern, and that's one of the reasons why I believe his advisors may have said we probably need to do this at a more moderate pace. There is certainly the capability for civil war returning to Afghanistan when the Americans pull out. We've seen that in other operations that we've done. We saw that happen in Vietnam. We saw that happen in Iraq. We've seen it happen in a number of other places where U.S. troops were present one day and then gone the next day. That is certainly something we do not want to see happen in Afghanistan, not only for the lives of the Afghan civilians that will be affected, but for those soldiers in America who have put their lives on the line and some didn't return.
What might change the U.S. withdrawal decision? Are there any red lines?
Well, I think certainly the issue of violence on the part of the Taliban will affect that. If the Taliban significantly increase their level of violence and instability, that will slow down the American withdrawal. The inability to come to an agreement on the peace talks between the Afghans themselves and with the United States, if those all blow up, obviously that will affect the timeline. And the resurgence of al-Qaeda or any other groups such as other violent extremist groups reemerging inside of Afghanistan and setting up a safe haven and sanctuary inside of Afghanistan, of course, the Americans will react to that as well. So I think there are a number of factors that would cause the Americans to stay longer than this administration may anticipate.
What about the U.S.-European allies? Do you see them following the U.S. withdrawal the same way they entered Afghanistan when U.S. invaded the country after 9/11? Or they might stay even if the U.S. withdraws all its troops?
Well, it's certainly the prerogative of the European countries to make their own choice about the deployment and redeployment of their own forces. I would expect, however, that if the United States leaves, that the Europeans will be unwilling to set up a separate mission, say perhaps through the European Union, as they have done in Bosnia and other places.
VOA Afghan Service reporter Breshna Omerkale speaking with General Mark Kemet.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Can the coronavirus survive in cold weather? Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you're sick or advised to by local authorities. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
The U.S. Justice Department, along with the attorneys general of 11 states, brought a massive antitrust lawsuit against Google on Tuesday, accusing the tech giant of maintaining illegal monopolies over search and search advertising on the Internet. Attorney General William Barr called the lawsuit a monumental case both for the Department of Justice and for the American people. In a statement, Google's chief legal officer, Kent Walker, called the lawsuit deeply flawed. Meanwhile, Facebook, Twitter, and other internet companies are rolling out new policies on controversial content during the U.S. presidential campaign. Michelle Quinn reports.
Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is famously active on Twitter. But in recent weeks, Twitter has placed warnings on some of Trump's tweets, such as about the coronavirus and voting by mail. At Team Trump, the Trump campaign's Twitter account also was temporarily blocked from tweeting an article about the son of his Democratic opponent, Joe Biden. Some welcomed Twitter's actions for reducing the spread of misinformation. Others have criticized the decisions as biased, curtailing conservative speech in a way that could affect the outcome of the U.S. election. It's not just Twitter. Facebook has also limited the ability of Trump to share the story about Biden's son. Other sites have taken similar strong action. YouTube, owned by Google, said it was banning content associated with QAnon, which the company calls conspiracy theory content used to justify real-world violence. Why are the companies acting now? Lisa Kaplan is the chief executive of the Aletheia Group, which consults with companies and organizations about disinformation.
The thing about the upcoming election, as a colleague put it, it's kind of like the disinformation Super Bowl. It's all eyes are on. We're looking for it to happen. We're anticipating that it's going to happen, and it's this big event.
Not too long ago, the internet companies let their users do the talking without much interference. After the 2016 U.S. election, they were criticized for not doing enough to stop misinformation on their services, including letting foreign-sponsored networks run online influence campaigns. Over the past year and increasingly in recent weeks, Twitter, Facebook, Google, and others have tightened rules and enforced their policies. Ann Ravel was the chair of the Federal Election Commission. A Democrat, she is running for state senate in California.
I think that they need to accept that they have to be the ones to deal with these issues and not be able to be the enablers as they were previously.
Some Republicans say that the new rules are unfairly enforced, squelching conservative voices. Republican senators have called for the CEOs of Twitter and Facebook to testify about their policies. Lawmakers from both parties are considering changing the laws that currently say that companies are not responsible for the speech other people publish on their sites. Take that protection away and the companies will be destroyed, said Ken Paulson, director of the Free Speech Center at Middle Tennessee University.
Unless you really want to kill Facebook and Twitter, there's no middle ground here. Either have a very small service or you're going to have to run the risk of having content that is disturbing, confusing, and that misinforms people. There's really just two choices, and Congress can't do much about it except try to destroy Twitter and Facebook.
As Election Day approaches, the stakes are high for the internet firms and for the U.S. public. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Now on VOA Asia, Australian police say that they are investigating reports of an alleged transfer of Vatican funds to Australia during the prosecution of former Vatican treasurer George Pell for child sex abuse and have referred the matter to an anti-corruption body. Libby Hogan has more.
Australian police said on Wednesday they were investigating the alleged transfer of Vatican funds to Australia during the prosecution of former Vatican treasurer George Pell for child sex abuse. The case has been referred to an anti-corruption body. Italian media recently reported that Pell's nemesis, Cardinal Angelo Becciu, sent €700,000 to Australia to help Pell's, quote, enemies, while Pell was facing sexual assault charges. But Becciu's lawyers have denied the reports. Italian media reported that the alleged wire transfer may have been used to buy the accusers in Pell's trial. Pell served 13 months in jail on charges he assaulted two choir boys. He was then acquitted by Australia's High Court in April. The High Court ordered Pell's convictions to be quashed, ending the most high-profile case of alleged historical sex abuse to rock the Roman Catholic Church. Pell, who maintained his innocence throughout the lengthy court process, cannot be retried on the charges.
That was Libby Hogan reporting. A NASA probe orbiting an asteroid over 100 million miles from Earth made a perilous attempt Tuesday to snatch a sample from the celestial body's rocky surface to bring home the space agency's first handful of pristine asteroid rocks. Gloria Tso reports.
NASA made history on Tuesday with the first ever attempt to collect a sample from an asteroid in space to return it to Earth for study. Asteroids are among the leftover debris from the solar system's formation some 4.5 billion years ago. And scientists say the Bennu asteroid could hold clues to the origins of life on Earth. NASA's OSIRIS-REx spacecraft performed a complex maneuver to drill into the Bennu asteroid for 5 seconds to retrieve the sample. Dr. Lucy Lim is a NASA planetary scientist.
It's just scientifically really exciting. You know, it's the first time that we've, you know, been to the surface, tried to touch the surface of another solar system object, the first time that NASA has tried to do that and bring back the sample, you know, in a really long time. And the first time that NASA has tried to do it on an asteroid.
The spacecraft's journey to Bennu began in 2016 with a launch from Florida's Kennedy Space Center. It has been in orbit around the asteroid for nearly 2 years, over 100 million miles from Earth, preparing for the touch-and-go maneuver. Scientists believe the mission will provide information about the building blocks of the solar system. According to NASA, Bennu has a 1 in 2,700 chance of hitting Earth late into the next century.
That was Reuters reporter Gloria Tso. Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our team. It includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Take care of yourself and enjoy the day ahead.